So I want to welcome everybody to tonight's call. We have a very special guest speaker, Ananda Moore, and we are going to conduct this the way that we normally do. I'll ask a number of questions for the first maybe 45 or 50 minutes, and then I'll open up the lines and let some of the participants ask questions as well. And it should be a particularly interesting call this evening. So first of all, let me just give a quick introduction for Ananda. Ananda is the co-owner of Riverdale Homeopathic Resources and Community Wealth Center, Wellness Center, and she graduated with honors from the Ontario College of Homeopathic Medicine and also continues her studies with a variety of renowned teachers in India and Canada. Ananda is registered with the Ontario Homeopathic Association, and she regularly teaches, oh, I didn't even know this, Reiki Level 1 and Level 2, and also Level 3 is also taught on request. And you can get more information about that by visiting her website, www.anandahomeopathics.com. I'll spell that out for everybody. It's www.anandahomeopathics.com. And you can also see her new blog on homeopathy at www.homeopathicobserver.blogspot.com. And the reason we have Ananda on right now is because Ananda just recently went to Cuba and is making this what looks to be a wonderful film on the work that they're doing down there with homeopathic prophylaxis. So we're particularly excited about this. I don't know if anybody's seen the little vignette that she created, but it was very exciting. I found it really well done, very professional, quite amusing. And if this is any taste of what we're going to get with the feature film, I think we've got something that's going to be a real tool that we can use in homeopathy to create more awareness about this great art and science and really allow us to bridge out into the larger world community. So very excited to have you on the call today, Ananda. Thank you. I know you've got a lot on your plate, and we appreciate you taking the time to join us.
I'm absolutely honored to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, our pleasure. So let me just start. Why did you decide to start your filming project in Cuba? What was that all about?
Well, a couple of years ago, they had a New Path conference here in Toronto. A doctor named Gustavo Bracho was invited to come speak, and he is an immunologist in an institute called the Finley Institute in Cuba. And they're mostly responsible for immunizations, vaccines, things like meningitis. Their vaccines are used all over the world. And they did something really interesting, which was decide to start using homeopathic remedies instead of vaccinations. And they had really spectacular results preventing a disease called leptospirosis in Cuba. They stopped it mid-epidemic, and they came to present the results. Luckily, I got to spend some time with Dr. Bracho and got to know him a little bit, and that enabled us to actually go to Cuba and actually film this. I thought it was something really important that could have a lot of implications in our public health care system, and something that I think could start the grassroots movement to influence our medical system.
Wow, pretty amazing. Now, the Finley Institute, primarily before introducing this concept of homeopathic prophylaxis, was mostly doing work with vaccinations. Is that correct?
Yep, that's their big focus.
Very interesting. So there must be something about how homeopathy has been integrated into the medical system in Cuba, I would imagine, that would allow them to, you know, that somebody that would be using immunizations to somehow incorporate the use of homeopathy. I'm curious, do you know a little bit about the history of homeopathy in Cuba? And could you tell us a little bit about that if you do? Are you back?
I'm back.
Oh, okay. Okay. Did you hear the question I asked?
No, I only got the first half.
Oh, okay. So I was just a little bit curious because it seems kind of surprising that, you know, an organization, an institute that would be using vaccinations would somehow move over into the incorporating the use of homeopathic remedies, especially homeopathic prophylaxis, which a lot of people are not that aware of. And so I was wondering a little bit about what kind of environment exists in Cuba, and if perhaps you could tell us a little about the history of homeopathy in that part of the world.
Oh, well, in terms of history, in the 1800s, Spanish homeopaths came to Cuba and really popularized homeopathy. I got to go to two different pharmacies in Cuba, where that one is considered an international heritage site. And they used to sell homeopathic remedies and, I think, manufacture them. And it's pretty amazing to see all these old tools, mortar and pestles, and vials full of remedies. But by the 1900s, homeopathy had virtually vanished, basically, from Cuba. And then in the 90s, it really hit a resurgence because the director of the Finley Institute, who's a doctor named Concepcion Campa, and who's also a very significant politician in Cuba, on a trip to Brazil, found that people were using homeoprophylaxis quite successfully. And so she became really curious. And being very open-minded, she started having her local doctors, she gave them the opportunity to start studying homeopathy. So this was happening in the 90s. I think around 95, the first class of homeopaths in 94 graduated. And it started to grow from there. I think it was 2007, they were actually starting to plan some clinical trials for leptospirosis. And because they had had some very, very heavy rains in the western provinces of Cuba, they started to have an epidemic of leptospirosis. And at that point, they hadn't had huge epidemics for a while, and they didn't have enough vaccine for everyone. They had enough vaccine to cover 0.1% of the population, and to prepare more vaccine would take another 3 months, and then it takes 2 shots, so it's once a person gets the vaccine, it takes about a month to have any immunity, so it was pointless to go out and try to immunize people in the middle of an epidemic. And so they decided to just, why not, let's try the homeoprophylaxis. They quickly isolated 5 strains of leptospirosis in their labs, and people went out with these plastic bottles of water, which they succussed on site, and they prepared doses of leptospirosis nosode, went around, and hand by hand immunized 2.5 million people. And the results were incredible. By the time they covered that whole population within 2 weeks, and the leptospirosis rates dropped quite dramatically. So in that environment, they were a lot of the scientists who had been working on it, and I'm talking about, you know, immunologists and experts in leptospirosis and all very, like, renowned scientists in Cuba, saw these incredible results with homeopathy, and they really couldn't doubt what was going on. So that was the environment it began in.
Wow. Maybe for the benefit of the people listening to this, you could tell them a little bit about what leptospirosis is, because I would imagine some people are not familiar with that particular health problem.
Yeah, I was actually surprised when I got to Cuba, because everyone in Cuba knows what leptospirosis is and is very, very aware of it. It's a spirochete, a bacteria that's spread through contact with animals. So mostly through the urine and feces of rats, also domestic animals, cats, dogs, and mostly cattle. And from what they explained to me, it's actually present all over the world. There's nowhere that doesn't have leptospirosis. But what happens is that in tropical countries, when there's a lot of flooding or hurricanes, especially in the countryside, workers who come in contact with a lot of animals become very susceptible to it, and it spreads through the water and contact with the skin. So they'll have enormous epidemics. We went around talking to people on the streets and met people who had leptospirosis. And there's different ways that the disease can act. So it can be an acute, where a person has a fever, flu-like symptoms, and then they improve, they get better, and everything's okay. There's cases that become chronic disease, I think similar to Lyme's disease. And there are also cases that become very acute and present like meningitis or hepatitis, and will lead to death if they're not treated quickly enough. And the problem with leptospirosis is that it's very difficult to diagnose. because it mimics so many other diseases. Usually leptospirosis is the last disease that they think of. In Cuba, they became quite astute at recognizing it, but it's still a very serious disease there.
And the normal treatment for it is, what do they normally do?
Antibiotics.
It's antibiotics.
There's a specific antibiotic that's used. Usually, if it's treated in the first 3 weeks, it's much more easy to treat. In later stages, it becomes quite difficult.
When it gets into the more chronic stage, I would imagine, is when it's really problematic.
Or in the acute, a lot of people die from the disease.
And
I can't remember the percentage, but I think it was maybe close to 10%.
10%, wow.
Of people who get the really acute version of the disease.
Do you know, are there what other parts of the world where there's major outbreaks of leptospirosis?
I know there was one recently in Nicaragua. Well, not recently, last time. So maybe a year ago. Anywhere that's a tropical area.
Sure. And I guess associated with a lot of rain, is that correct?
So it's flooding.
Flooding, yeah.
Rains, hurricanes, storms, monsoons, that sort of thing.
Right. And I'm curious, Anandu, how does the government there, in terms of this introduction of homeopathy and especially homeopathic prophylaxis, how are they reacting, responding to the use and incorporation of homeopathy into their medical system?
Well, the government is very supportive. Raul Castro, who's Fidel's brother and the president of Cuba, actually started something called the Green Medicine Revolution. And it was his way of making sure that they had medicine for troops in case of a loss of access to foreign medications. So it became growing a lot of plants and herbs and getting to know more traditional medicinal treatments, acupuncture. They do even things with magnets and pyramids, all this crazy stuff that to us might seem a little far out. But it's been very, very effective for them. So the government has been incredibly supportive of it. And Concepcion Campa, who is the woman who helped lead this whole homeopathic program, she's really well respected in the country. She's loved and adored, and she's also got a lot of political influence. So there, from the political point of view, I think there's been a lot of support. Apparently, at the very beginning of the program, there was a lot of skepticism and a lot of people who weren't very impressed with what was going on. But people were very reticent to talk to me about that and about the skeptics in Cuba. So I didn't get to learn much about that.
Now, I know the results were quite dramatic, and you kind of alluded to that just a moment ago. What was the response once they saw these? I mean, what were it? Could you have the specifics in terms of what the actual effects or statistical results were and how these were received by the government and the community there in Cuba?
Mm-hmm. Well, originally they were expecting during the epidemic to have probably around 500 to 700 cases a week of leptospirosis, and they ended up with rates lower than they would have in non-epidemic times. So like 2 or 3 cases per week. And since then, they haven't had any cases of leptospirosis.
Wow.
And actually, in 2008, they had 2 very large hurricanes, Gustav and Ike, I believe, that hit one right after the other, wreaked horrific havoc. And they didn't have an epidemic that year either, which was highly expected. And since then, so for the last 3 years, they really haven't had any cases of leptospirosis. They actually wanted to continue to do the clinical trials, but couldn't because there's no leptospirosis on the island anymore, as far as they're aware.
Wow.
Oh,
that's
they've
amazing.
Done very similar, and leptospirosis isn't the only disease they've worked with.
Sure.
They've done hepatitis. Which the rates have become very, very low, but they can't prove anything with hepatitis, for example, because it's a diagnosis of elimination. So it means that there's no blood test for hepatitis A, right? It's specific to hepatitis A. And it's more figuring out what it isn't and coming to the point of saying there's no hepatitis. This is a case of hepatitis A. And again, there's been very, very few cases left of Hep A, which is also spread by flooding and dirty water.
So, Ananda, do you know exactly how they choose the remedy for their homeoprophylactic treatment?
They just use the nozode.
They use the nozode itself.
Mm-hmm. They isolated 5 different forms of the bacteria, and they put those together and made a nozode solution from there.
Very interesting. And you mentioned a moment ago they've also been working with hepatitis. Any other things as well?
They started with neuritis in the 1990s, and at that point they weren't quite sure what it was, but people were coming down with these horrible neurological diseases. And I didn't get much information on that, but they've done work with conjunctivitis, with H1N1. They decided to do a homeoprophylaxis program, and they actually reached 9 million people across the country with that one.
Wow.
It was, and they, on camera, they refused to tell me how it went. They're scared, oh, all the data isn't in yet. But off camera, they told me that the cases of flu, or flu visits to the doctor, rather, were reduced by 200,000 cases that year compared to average.
Amazing. Now, I remember reading someplace, Ananda, that even though they had these dramatic results with the homeoprophylactic treatment of leptospirosis, that as of this point, there have been no medical journals or publications that have been willing to publish this information. Is that correct? Do you know much about that?
Well, the journal Homeopathy did eventually publish it,
mm-hmm.
but they had been trying to get a full medical journal to publish it, or a mainstream medical journal to publish it. And they got a lot of negative feedback. Or rather, no one told them that they didn't believe in the results. They got comments like, you know, this isn't the right journal for this, or our audience isn't the right audience for this. They also got, I think, from The Lancet, they got a request to have every single participant sign a waiver. So that meant going back, getting 2.5 million people to sign these waivers, which is logistically impossible for them. And these are things that they would never request of any other similar study.
Amazing.
So they made it really difficult. And even Dr. Bracho received threats from different people, death threats. And one of the journals asked for an investigation with the World Health Organization to come into Cuba and say that they were threatening people's lives by using homeoprophylaxis. And the World Health Organization, you know, followed up, came to investigate, but as soon as they got the data, they kind of backed off.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is there, you know, this is pretty amazing stuff, obviously, and your film obviously is going to highlight all of this work and, you know, bring it to a larger public awareness. When you were there, is this the only type of research that's going on using homeopathic remedies, or is there other research going on in Cuba as well?
Not at all. They're doing incredible work. It's such an open place, and there's so much support for it. Every homeopath I met and talked to was working on their own research. I talked to one homeopath who was a periodontist, and she had started the use of Hypericum instead of anesthetic and had done studies on it. She says they had really amazing results. Now dentists across the country are using Hypericum instead of anesthetic if the patient is amenable to that. And they're doing things like root canals, just using Hypericum. What else? Cancer treatment. There's a lot of research going into cancer treatment. There's a remedy that's made from scorpion venom, a very local scorpion endemic to Cuba, which is being used homeopathically as an anti-tumoric, anti-inflammatory, and an analgesic. And over 40,000 people have taken it with great results. They're even looking into things like circadian rhythms and what are the best times to give people a remedy. They're doing research into different combinations. They're proving new remedies. They're doing really interesting things.
Do you have a sense, Ananda, of actually how many practitioners there are in Cuba doing homeopathy, and what percentage of the entire medical community that represents?
I asked a few different people and got several answers, but I think the most official answer I got was that there are about 2,000 homeopaths on the island.
Hmm.
I have no idea what that represents in terms of the number of doctors.
Sure.
But they're also, the homeopaths can, you have to be either an MD, a vet, or a pharmacist to study homeopathy or to practice it.
So there's no lay homeopaths there?
There's no lay homeopaths. No.
Okay. And is it being fairly well received by the population there?
Yeah, we did a little segment where we went around talking to people on the street, asking them if they'd ever heard of homeopathy. Often they say no. And then we'd say, have you tried the drops? They call them the goticas, the drops. And people will be like, oh, yeah, those are great, and they go on to tell us their experiences with them. And people really trust their medical system in Cuba. So if someone says, this is an experimental vaccine, we'd like to try it, people will go for it without thinking twice about it. So everyone was pretty open to the homeopathic vaccines, or not vaccines, but homeoprophylaxis. And in general, homeopathic formulas that are sold across the country are prescribed by doctors. And most of the people I talked to on the street felt that they worked and felt that they had experience with them, and people said they'd rather do that than put chemicals in their bodies. So there seemed to be a lot of open-mindedness about it.
Hmm. And, I mean, can people go and buy the remedies for first aid and, just more minor types of issues, or is it really only through the medical system that these remedies are dispensed?
It's only through the medical system, but it isn't difficult. Like, you have an injury, you go to the pharmacy, you can tell the pharmacist this is what happened, and they'll kind of take your case quickly, and they'll give you something over the counter. At the homeopathic pharmacy, there's a homeopath that works there, so they'll also see patients throughout the day. And people wait in to see them. And because homeopathy is part of the medical system there, no one pays for any homeopathic treatment.
Hmm.
So you just you go, you get your remedy, and it's a fairly simple process.
What about chronic treatment? I mean, you're talking about, these leptospirosis and, hepatitis type A epidemics. Or outbreaks, but what about actual, classical, chronic treatment of health problems with homeopathy? Is that something that's going on there as well?
Yeah, and that's a big part of what they're doing. I got to meet with some really fascinating homeopaths and check out their clinics and see them taking cases. And it's very, very classical, very Hahnemanian in a way, though they're very open to everything they've learned. I got to sit in on one clinic where there's a team of 5 homeopaths who all work together. They take a case together, they sit and they discuss what they think is the best remedy, and then they prescribe a remedy. And what's really been fascinating for me is how strong the homeopathic community there is in terms of how they work together. There's a large group of them that meet every month. They talk about what cases they've had. They talk about what's going on in terms of what's common and what diseases are going around. And they make recommendations to the government and to the institutes, which are then taken seriously and actually implemented. I saw things from, like, cases of autism to the current common cold. Fibroids. There was a lot of research being done on uterine fibroids. So there is a lot of constitutional treatment and what we properly call classical homeopathy.
Hmm. Where are most of the people practicing homeopathy being trained? Are they being trained in Cuba or outside of Cuba?
Being trained in Cuba, but they're being taught. Most of them have come from a Brazilian school. So the teachers came to Cuba and they do 3-year courses. There's some, I believe, from Spain and I think also Argentina. There was a third country, I can't remember quite what it was, maybe Mexico. I think it was Mexico that was bringing in teachers. They also bring in teachers to do seminars and talks. And now they're starting their own program there. There's a variety of diplomas that doctors can get, where they slowly amass homeopathic knowledge. And now they're starting a master's program in homeopathy. So doctors can go and do this two-year program and get a master's in homeopathy.
Interesting. You know, first of all, I want to say that all this is really fascinating. I hope the people who are listening to this appreciate that, you know, you've got a country in the world that's really embracing homeopathy like this, especially in this part of the world. You know, of course, if you go to India, it's part of the, you know, it's part of the medical system, and you go to Germany and you've got, you know, 25,000 medical doctors who are using some form of homeopathy. But, you know, in this part of the world, it's a little bit rarer. So to see, you know, a country really embracing homeopathy, it's a real, very refreshing. I'd like to move on, actually, and just talk a little bit about your experience going to Cuba, and then maybe, you know, some other questions about the actual state of homeopathy in Cuba can be asked by some of the participants. But I'm really curious, you know, this is your first time going to Cuba?
It was my first time going to Cuba, yeah.
Okay, so that must have been exciting in and of itself. What was it like to film there?
It was pretty tricky. Because it's a communist country, that people are scared to talk. So you need to make sure that people trust you and people are willing to, like, feel that you're not going to put them in any tricky situation. And they're very careful about what they say. You need a permit for every person you're going to film, every street corner you want to film, every view you want to get. And this is a long process to get all these permits. But the people there are just unbelievable. And I've traveled a lot. I've traveled a lot in Latin America as well. And in general, I'd say people are friendly, but Cubans will give you the shirt off their backs, and even if they don't know you. We'd get people inviting us into their homes off their balconies as we're walking down the street and inviting us for dinner. We'd have people stopping us on the street, wanting to comment and ask us about what we're doing. What was tricky is once we wanted to turn the cameras on and ask them on camera to tell us what they had told us off camera, most of them would say no and run away for fear that they might say something that could incriminate them.
Mm.
But, yeah, it was a lot of doors were opened for us by Dr. Bracho, and it was really spectacular.
It sounds like a very positive experience. So I would imagine that there were also some challenges. Do you have any interesting stories about some of the difficulties you might have confronted when you were down there?
Sure. Well, when we first got there, we had what's called a fixer, like a location manager. And he had failed to inform us, as well as the staff at the Finley Institute, that the country was having their large national holiday at that time of year. They don't celebrate Christmas, but they celebrate this July 26th. It was a very important date at the beginning of the revolution. And no one works for 3 days, so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we lost 3 days of filming. And then most people take their holidays on top of that time of year so that they can extend their break. So we lost close to a week of filming, and we only had 2 weeks to film there, so that was pretty disheartening. One of the main people we wanted to talk to, which was Dr. Campa, unfortunately had been called into an assembly, a national assembly, being a very important person in Cuba. The assembly, which was supposed to be over on Sunday, for her stretched into Tuesday, at which point she was suddenly called off to go to Cameroon or some country like that, and we were never able to speak with her, unfortunately. Little things like that, you know, walking down the streets for days trying to get people to talk to us, because we wanted to talk to people outside of the homeopathic community or the institutions. And people really, really afraid to talk on camera. And just not being able to film here, not being able to film there, being worried that we were filming the wrong building. Oh, no, that's the communist party's office. You can't film there, running away quickly, and not really so many rules that you're not aware of, and you're stopped halfway through.
So, Ananda, did you go by yourself and do this filming, or did you have somebody who was also helping you when you went down there?
I went with a filmmaker because I unfortunately didn't know the first thing about filmmaking. His name's David Willens, fabulous camera guy, and really, really helped support the whole process. And there in Cuba, we had our location manager, Ivan, who was a blast. We had a driver, and we had our sound guy. And it was a really nice crew. I felt like I had a little entourage with me everywhere I went. But yeah, there's no way I could have done this by myself.
So what part are you playing in the creation of the film?
So I'm the director, but I'm also in the film. So the idea of the film is a bit of an exploration, of my exploration, in which, yes, I'm a homeopath, so it might give me a slightly one-sided view, but really I'm trying to figure out if, you know, my practice and what I see in my practice is just placebo. Is it real? Why is there so much cynicism and criticism against homeopathy? And kind of going out there with an open eye, trying to find if there really truly is compelling evidence that supports homeopathy.
Very interesting. So where are you with the film now? I mean, what do you see happening with it?
Well, we filmed about 10 hours worth of footage, and at this point I really want to go back, but we're putting together a small piece that will be shown in October at the Joint National Conference here in Toronto, and we're going to grow it from there. In the long run, I'm really excited to go to Africa, look at projects like what Jeremy Sher is doing in treating AIDS. I'm interested. I've been asked to come to Pakistan by someone who's been working with Afghani orphans. I'm really interested in looking at the work of Luc Montagnier. So I want to do a bigger exploration of what evidence there is for homeopathy around the world.
The film on Cuba is going to be its own separate film, or are you going to combine this with some of the other footage that you're collecting?
I think our plan is to make several short films and then combine them into a full feature.
I see. So this one with Cuba, you think it'll be approximately how long?
Right now, maybe about 22 minutes.
Okay.
That's the assumption, yeah.
And then you'll go and you'll travel around and you'll go and... Now, Luc Montagnier, I understand, is in China at the moment. Is that where you're planning to go to actually film him, or how are you thinking of doing that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'll find out. I think I'm not sure where it's going to be the best place to film him. I don't know if we need to film his labs and see what he's actually been up to and if he'll even let us in, but that's someone who I'm really interested in talking to.
Are you actually in contact with Luc Montagnier already? Or?
No, but I know people who are, so I'm hoping that they can help me out.
Okay, yeah, because for those people who don't know, actually, the interview I did with Liz Whaler, I happened to bring up Luc Montagnier's work. You know, for those people who are on the call and not aware, Luc Montagnier is a Nobel Prize-winning virologist who basically discovered the HIV virus and subsequent to that conducted these incredible experiments with proteins and various viruses where they would be diluted beyond any possibility of a material remains of any substance left, and yet even when that was the case, the nucleotides or the RNA or DNA viruses would actually replicate themselves, and he actually discovered there's electromagnetic impulses. So this is, you know, a fascinating area, and for you to go out and incorporate it in your film, I think is very important because it really demonstrates, really for the first time, the absolute scientific validity of, potentized remedies. And so I think that's very exciting that you're doing that, and I can see that really bridging the gap between what we do and the scientific community in general. So I really applaud you for pursuing that. It's pretty exciting work.
Well, I have to say that something that Dr. Bracho had said was, when I asked him, you know, there wasn't a placebo or a control group with what happened with the leptospirosis study, and he said, well, you know, he'd worked on meningitis vaccines, he was working on a cholera vaccine, and he'd say, often in clinical trials, the vaccines seem to be working really well and be really effective, and then when you take them out into the field, they don't work, and we don't know why.
Mm.
And so the most effective evidence, really, that we have is when we go out in the field at such huge numbers and we see such amazing results. So I think the science is really interesting, what's happening in the lab, but what's happening out in the field is the real food.
I mean, that's the reality, isn't it? And it also demonstrates that there's just things that we don't really understand about how the healing process occurs, and that, you know, putting something in a laboratory and studying it doesn't necessarily replicate the reality of what actually, as you said, happens in the field. I think it's a very important point to make.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is obviously a very exciting project. I'm imagining that it requires quite a bit of funding for you to travel around and go to different parts of the world. If people want to support this project, how can they do that?
Well, right now we have a campaign that started on a website called Indiegogo. So that's IndieGogo.com. And you can just look up there In Search of Evidence. And you'll have our little video clip there and different ways that you can help support the project. And actually the most expensive part of doing something like this is the post-production. And, you know, all the lawyers that need to go through things and animation and editing. So now is where it actually we need the most amount of support, and support to be able to actually get it out to film festivals, to television, and be able to offer it online. So we do still really need help in order to make this a reality, even though a portion of it has actually been filmed.
And are you also going to make this available via DVD for people's own personal use as well?
Yeah, eventually we will. First we need to be able to, in order to take it to film festivals, you can't have released it yet. So it just depends on all the politics behind the film festivals. But we will make our first, like, we'll have different versions of the film, so some will definitely be available for purchase or probably just for download. So we'll see how that goes.
Any sense of when you think the full film will be completed?
The full short for Cuba, hopefully by the end of, maybe mid next year. I'm not sure. As we're working through the editing process, I'm learning that it takes a lot of time. But I also feel right now that we're missing some key ingredients and need to go back to Cuba to film.
Mm-hmm. And when do you plan to go back there?
It all depends on our friends back there and when they're going to be around and when they can make time for us.
Nice.
So we'll see what happens.
And what about the larger full film, you know, that's got, you know, the parts with Jeremy in Africa and, you know, Luc Montagnier's work? Do you have any estimates of when that might be ready to be viewed?
I'd probably give that a couple years. A
couple years,
yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll all be waiting, you know, with great anticipation. I'll have to probably take some gelsimium just to stave off wanting to see it. Can you just repeat again the website so that people, if they have want to find out more information about it or contribute funds or?
Yep. So it's Indiegogo.com, IndieGogo.com, and the name of the film is In Search of Evidence. You can also, we'll probably have information on our website soon, which is riverdalehomeopathy.com. And I actually don't update that, and on the homeopathics website, it's really, really, really old.
Fantastic. Now, I'm just curious, what about, I know you practice homeopathy, and you also are involved in the running of Riverdale books, resources.
Mm-hmm.
What are you still going to be doing that? Because, I mean, if you're traveling around the world doing all this filming, I would imagine it's hard to you know, wear both of those hats.
Yeah, well, luckily the filming goes in spurts. And, you know, it's a month away here, a few weeks away there. The rest of the time, well, we just hired a manager to help run the store and the clinic here. And I am still seeing my patients, and suddenly I've been asked to teach an acute care course for the American Medical College of Homeopathy. So I'm pretty busy with some other projects as well, which is one of my weaknesses. I have a hard time saying no.
It really sounds great. I'm going to open up and let some other people ask some questions.
Okay.
Is there anything that you wanted to add before I do that?
There's so much, I don't know where to start. There's so many great things.
Oh, something really interesting before we pass it on to the audience.
Sorry?
Let's share something interesting with us, and then I'll pass it on.
Something interesting. they started proving a new remedy there, and they call it podium. And it is an armamentarium, I like it, but it's a very small remedy. It's called Senna Acta, it's the second word starts with an A. And they're finding it as this incredible panacea. There's homeopaths that are using it as a base remedy on almost everyone because they're just finding it as a general immune booster.
Mm-hmm.
Not very classical, but this coming from very classical homeopaths. So it's interesting how they're developing their own ideas and working further with things.
Fantastic. Okay, well, let me go ahead and open it up and some other people can ask some questions. Hold on.
Sure.
Great. So any questions for Ananda?
Well, yeah, I'm Lyle Loeffler. I'm from Woodstock. And I think what you're doing is going to be just fantastic for the homeopathic community and not just maybe Canada, maybe United States and all over. So I really have to congratulate you on you know, all the energy and the work that you're putting into this.
Thank you.
And as far as Cuba is practically my second home. I've been to Cuba probably 35 times.
Oh, wow.
So I started vacationing in Cuba when tourism first opened up. So what I observed in Cuba 30 years ago compared to now, there's really some profound changes.
I'd be really interested to hear what some of those changes have been.
Oh, just the, you know, I think it's fabulous what Castro has done, you know, and with the demise of communism, and, you know, basically he was bankrupt, and he created this plan to allow countries like Spain and Canada, and there's several other countries to come in and build hotels, and so Cuba has some just fabulous, fabulous resorts, five-star mm-hmm. resorts. It's the best deal.
Have you had any experience with the homeopathic community?
Well, when I travel, I take a complete first aid kit, and there has been a couple occasions at the airport because they go through everything, and of course they pick my satchel of remedies out, and they call someone to look at it and say, "Oh yeah, homeopathy, yes." Yeah. And so they're certainly aware of homeopathy.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Okay, Lad, did you have a question too you wanted to ask?
I wondered, I know that Homeopaths Without Borders has been going down there a number of times. Are they in any way connected with any of these doctors, since you say that only medical doctors can practice? Have they taught any of them?
Yeah, they have. Martine Jours. So it's not Homeopaths Without Borders. I think it's Homeopaths de Terre Sans Frontières. They are doing a lot of work, and Martine came up in so many interviews I did. People would mention her. She's been very influential there. A lot of the formulas, when they need it, have come from her. The stuff that's being sold over the counter. She's taught a lot of people. She's running all kinds of programs. She's helped them, you know, figure out genus epidemicus remedies for different epidemics they've had. So she's been very, very influential there. And I know she's on her way there tomorrow.
Okay.
And Canadians in general have played a fairly big role in homeopathy in Cuba. Homeo Del trained many of the homeopathic pharmacists there. They trained the ones that work at the Finley Institute, for example, and the ones who are preparing all these leptospirosis nozodes and all these other remedies they're making.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Other questions for Ananda?
Hi. My name is Durga.
Hello.
Hi. It's interesting to learn about your experience with Cuba. I was wondering, actually, since a long time, why homeopathy is not taken up in Haiti when there was a huge earthquake and still there are a lot of people.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that question? Because I had a hard time hearing it. I'm imagining Ananda might have as well. Just repeat the latter part of that question.
I was wondering why this kind of thing is not taken up in Haiti.
Oh, in Haiti, okay.
Haiti, sorry. Okay. I mean, the Haiti government is a very different government. Cuba did actually offer its services and offered to use, I think it was the homeo prophylaxis for hepatitis and maybe for leptospirosis and for dengue, or for cholera, I believe. And the Haitian government, after some review and thinking about it, refused and turned them down. And they were going to offer all the remedies, the doctors, everything. So I think I'm guessing that there's a lot of pressure worldwide to suppress homeopathy and not to use it. So when these countries come under situations like Haiti has, and they have these options to have these free homeoprophylaxis, they're refusing it for some reason.
Actually, there were homeopaths who did go to Haiti shortly after the earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
Henry Van Der Zee, who's the editor of Lynx, went there with a group of homeopaths. And actually, this is documented on the film that we produced called Homeopathy Around the World. And they went there, and you can see the results were quite dramatic, actually. There's actually film footage of it where they go there, and you can see people who were having some very serious, especially emotional, psychological issues, you know, people who'd lost, you know, their whole families, or, you know, they were in a house when it collapsed on them, and now they have this tremendous phobia about being inside, and, you know, they had this very interesting protocol called 555 where they, you know, would bang it against the table five times and then put five drops in the person's mouth and then wait for 5 seconds. And there are these incredible testimonials of people who, you know, just said that, you know, they were depressed or anxious or fearful, and now, you know, they're feeling fantastic again, and even a lot of the kind of first aid issues were resolved very quickly. So there absolutely was some type of homeopathic intervention. You know, this is actually going around all over the world right now. There's literally hundreds of projects, and that's why I think what Ananda is doing is so important, is to bring to light the power that homeopathy has, you know, not just in the first world, but in the developing nations on this planet. And you know, it's really quite impressive. So, you know, again, we really applaud you for this work. It's very, very important. Other questions for Ananda? Anybody else have a question? So you're going to go back to Cuba, and then Africa is after that, you think, or do you know?
That's my hope. I'm just connected with someone who's been working with Jeremy Sayre, so hopefully that will get us down there.
Fantastic.
And we'll see how it goes. Once we have a small short film from Cuba, we'll be able to work on securing some more decent funding from, you know, Canadian organizations like not the National Film Board, but the all the different arts foundations and things like that.
Sure. And I would imagine now with the regulatory process that's going on in Ontario that there would be some interest from the government. Have you actually approached people like Basil Ziv or other government officials and talked to them about your project?
No, I haven't, and that's a really great idea. So we'll see. That's probably a next step to take.
Sounds great, yeah. I know Basil will be certainly very receptive to it, and you know, he's got certainly connections now. So, you know, this is the type of thing that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to open up and see if there's any more questions. Other than that, I want to just thank you again. It's just a great job that you're doing, and this is the type of work that's going to change the view of homeopathy around the world. So let me just open up and see if there's any more questions. Anybody have any final questions for Ananda? Okay, well, listen, Ananda, thank you again so much. We really applaud you for the work you're doing and the passion. It's obvious the passion that you have for this project, and we're really excited to see the first installment next, you said, October, November?
October at the Homeopathic Conference in Toronto. I can't remember the exact dates, but it's at the end of October.
Okay, if people wanted information about that, how could they find that information about that conference?
You know, if you hold on 2 seconds, I'll grab the flyer.
Sure, okay.
1 second.
No problem.
So it's the Canadian Homeopathic Conference, and their website is chconference.ca, and the phone number to reach them at is 416-516-6109. And it will be from October 21st to the 23rd. So we're going to be showing the film at the gala event on the 22nd.
fantastic. And that's going to be quite an event, isn't it? I mean, I think they're having some people, I think the Banerjees are coming in from India and some other really impressive speakers as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about the conference. It's a really nice way of the community here in Canada coming together and bringing really interesting speakers from around the world.
Fantastic. Well, again, Ananda, thank you so much. We really appreciate your efforts out there. And let's give Ananda a big North American thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ananda.
Thank you.
No, thank you guys for letting me talk and share my experiences. And
it was
really
great.
Excited.
All right. Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.